It looks like we are all present. Is that correct, Tammy? Are we all present? All of the speakers that I have signed up, I think, are present. All right, very good. We will begin then, but before I call the rule, the rules hearing, I wanted to let you all know that though the presenter will present and finish and other people will comment and finish, if you can all remain in case there are other comments and we need to bring you back again as a speaker, that would probably be the most helpful. So with that in mind, I will call our rules hearing for today, 20.07. It is in regard to appellate e-filing. And Marcia Vandercook, will you please begin?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Marcia Vandercook. I've been serving as staff to the Appellate E-Filing Committee, and I'm pleased to be here today to talk about appellate e-filing. It was 5 years ago today on St. Patrick's Day that this court heard the petition to adopt mandatory e-filing in the circuit courts, and it's been working well there ever since. 2 years ago, this court authorized a pilot project to develop e-filing in the appellate courts, and e-filing is now in daily use in the Court of Appeals. CCAP has built all of the software necessary for the Court of Appeals and much of the software for the Supreme Court. The Appellate E-Filing Committee has proposed a solid set of rules to govern e-filing on a permanent basis. So we're here today to ask you to adopt the proposed rule changes and to establish a date to make e-filing mandatory in the Court of Appeals, with the eventual rule to the Supreme Court when the court is ready. I'm here with a small team from the Appellate E-Filing Committee to address the petition from various parties. I will be talking about the committee process and the goals of the proposed rules. Ms. Reed will talk about how her office is converting paper files to electronic records and options for a rollout schedule to make e-filing mandatory. Mr. Goldschmidt will talk about the impact of these changes on the bar. Ms. Bosquet will talk about working with electronic documents and answer any technical questions. And Judge Stark will talk about how the pilot project has been working in the Court of Appeals from the judge's point of view. We've also asked Ms. Andrews to be here for questions, given her detailed procedural knowledge and her help in developing the rules. The Appellate E-Filing Committee met over the course of 20 months to oversee the pilot project. It also formed an 8-person subcommittee to draft specific language for the rule. While the rule was in development, drafts were circulated to a number of organizations and court committees for comment, and we received and incorporated quite a few good suggestions. The committee went through Chapter 809 carefully to see if any changes were needed for e-filing. However, this was not intended to be a full chapter rewrite. The committee's position was that any changes ought to be related to e-filing and to the efficient use of electronic records. The petition comes in two parts. Appendix A contains the changes requested to Chapter 809, and Appendix B proposes updates that are relevant to circuit court e-filing. In Appendix A, the mechanics of how appellate e-filing works are contained in one section, Section 809-801. This covers the aspects of e-filing that are applicable to all cases. It makes e-filing mandatory for attorneys and voluntary for self-represented litigants. It requires that filers register for the system and opt into their cases. It extends the filing date to 11:59 p.m. It authorizes the use of electronic signatures, and it requires that the official record be kept in electronic format. This section is built on the foundation of the circuit court rule, which has been in place for almost 5 years and has held up quite well. I also want to mention one thing that's not in the rule. 809-801 establishes the court's ability to set a rollout schedule to make e-filing mandatory in phases. But the rollout schedule itself does not appear in the rule. The idea is to allow the court the flexibility to advance between phases as it becomes ready, when programming, scanning, training, and publicity are complete. This process worked well for circuit court e-filing, and we think it will work well for appellate e-filing too. In addition to the nuts and bolts of e-filing, the committee decided it made sense to integrate e-filing terminology and procedure throughout the chapter which is what makes the petition so long. But the changes fall into three basic categories. First, the committee looked for opportunities to use the new technology to best advantage. One example is by allowing an appellate or petitioner to initiate the next level of review by electronically serving the initiating documents in the lower court. This will eliminate the need for paper mail service whenever the parties are already electronically connected. There are a number of format changes for easier reading and navigation, and changes to improve the legibility of scanned documents. The proposed rules also increase the use of automated transmission of documents between the circuit courts and the Court of Appeals. The second category of proposed changes is intended to clarify existing procedures and bring them into the rules to facilitate implementation. So, for example, the proposed rules explain the processes for the clerk to docket a case and the process for a party to file motions prior to appeal. Naming these procedures clarifies things for filers, and it also makes it easier for CCAP to create the drop-down menus that guide users forward through the e-filing system. Other changes update the rules and conform them to actual practice. For instance, the petition continues the current rule that allows the clerk to review electronic documents before they're accepted for filing, and clarifies that this review extends to paper documents as well, consistent with current practice. Finally, although the committee tried to avoid making changes that were unrelated to e-filing, a few small fixes are offered where the idea was popular and the solution seemed clear. So, for instance, the proposed rules use the circuit court document numbers in the record on appeal and resolve some conflicting language about whether the respondent in the petition for review can raise issues that were not raised by the petitioner. In Appendix B, the changes are straightforward. They keep the two e-filing rules in sync, and they make small changes suggested by the last 5 years of experience. For all of these changes, there's an explanation after each section of the rule and also in the memorandum. So I would like to stop here and see if the court has any questions for me about the proposed rules or the committee process.
Would any justice like to pose a question now, or do you prefer to wait? Okay, it seems it's quite quiet.
Well, then let me conclude by noting that in 2002, there was a Wisconsin Court e-filing committee that issued a report laying out a vision for the system that really we have today. And at that time, the SCCA and CCAP case management systems had only a fraction of their current capacity. They didn't hold any documents. They couldn't exchange information with attorneys. They were incompatible with each other, and they offered very little that was of use to the judges or justices. The courts have made really remarkable progress by building methodically over the last 20 years. So we ask this court to continue that progress by approving this petition as well. Thank you.
Okay. Attorney Goldschmidt, you will have to unmute your mic and then will you proceed?
Good morning from Milwaukee, Your Honors, and happy St. Patrick's Day. Thank you for taking the time to hear from stakeholders on this important issue. I'm speaking to you today from three perspectives and would be happy to answer your questions relating to any of them. First, I'm the chair-elect of the State Bar's Appellate Practice Section, so I can speak to the section's involvement in this process, its strong support for appellate e-filing, and the input we received from appellate practitioners around the state. Second, I'm the national chair of Quarles and Brady's appellate group, so I have some perspective on how appellate e-filing will work in Wisconsin's larger law firms, as well as on how Wisconsin's current and proposed rules compare to those in other appellate court systems. And third, I've spent several years now as the pro bono appeals coordinator for the appellate practice section, which means I field requests from the state public defender and our appellate courts to match worthy cases with pro bono counsel on appeal. And in this role, I'm sensitive to the burdens imposed on litigants by paper filing requirements, which by extension can make it more difficult to find volunteer attorneys for these cases. With those three roles in the background, I have three key points to share with you this morning. First, appellate practitioners support paperless appellate e-filing. In fact, I think we would respectfully say it's about time. We watched the rollout of electronic filing in the circuit courts, and just as an appeal follows the completion of the circuit court's work, so also appellate e-filing is the logical extension of what I think all agree was a highly successful implementation at the circuit court level. One of the reasons we support paperless appellate e-filing is that paper filings, and particularly paper briefs, are time-consuming and expensive. I went back to review some client invoices from a recent case that we handled in this court, and between the petition for review, the initial brief, and the reply brief, printing costs alone were nearly $900. While most corporate clients can absorb those costs, they are a hardship for parties with fewer resources, including frequent filers like the Department of Justice and the State Public Defender. Paper copies also add several steps to any filing. Now, this is a bit mechanical, but it illustrates the point. To comply with the court's current rules on paper briefs, someone in our office needs to start with an electronic copy of the brief, print all of the signature pages for physical signature, scan the signed pages into a PDF for incorporation back into the electronic copy of the brief, send that electronic copy to the printer to be printed, send a messenger to pick up the paper brief from the printer and take it to the court, wait to confirm that the clerk's office has accepted the paper brief as printed, and then electronically file the duplicate electronic version that we started with. Compare that to easy, low-cost electronic filing. All you need is a word processor and access to the internet, and as soon as you click save, you can click submit. All of the other steps I just reviewed are eliminated. On this point, I would also note that some other jurisdictions have taken a halfway approach, implementing electronic filing, but still requiring paper copies of all briefs. This almost entirely defeats the purpose of electronic filing. And in fact, it simply imposes additional requirements on top of already burdensome paper filing rules. So I commend this committee for proposing a paperless approach for Wisconsin. My second key point is that appellate practitioners are ready for e-filing. This is reflected in the strong support that we saw for the rule, both within the appellate practice section and across the appellate e-filing committee. Later, you'll hear Sheila Reif discuss the success of and enthusiastic participation in the e-filing pilot project. And as one of the attorneys helping Sheila find those cases, I can tell you that every time we approached a party about participating, they couldn't sign up fast enough. Mm-hmm. Readiness is also about preparedness. And we have had lots of practice with electronic filing in the circuit court. Perhaps even more importantly, so have our assistants. In light of the groundwork laid at the circuit court level, I'm convinced that the switch to appellate e-filing will be a natural transition for practitioners and their support staff. And having participated on the e-filing committee and fielded practitioner comments through the appellate practice section, I'm confident that practitioners' concerns around feasibility and practical implementation were addressed in the process.
Can I ask you a little question before you proceed? Given your position with the state bar, are you planning to set up educational reviews of the new process if the court passes it between now and July 1st, which is the proposed date?
Yes, Your Honor. So that was a concern that came up in the process. How do we roll out this information in a way that makes sure that everyone is up to speed by the time the new rules go into effect? So we're sensitive to that, and we've had conversations with CCAP about how they can help us do that as well. So that's certainly on our radar and something that we would be interested in supporting. One example of that is a CLE that many of the speakers today will be presenting together on the new e-filing rule within the next few weeks. My third and final point is that appellate e-filing will have concrete benefits for practitioners. This is not just about getting rid of paper. E-filing will also greatly facilitate the movement of a case between the various levels of our court system, particularly from the circuit court to the Court of Appeals, and when necessary, back again. The availability of an integrated electronic record is an exciting prospect, and it's one that federal practitioners have long come to expect. The new rules also eliminate the lag between when a paper brief is filed and when parties receive electronic copies of the brief, which provides earlier access to filed briefs and greater clarity around response deadlines. And we hope that making appellate filing easier and less costly will encourage more attorneys to volunteer for pro bono cases and accept appointments, whether through the state public defender or the courts. Having made these points, I will pause for any questions the court may have.
Well, we have a more quiet court than I'm used to, I can tell you that for sure.
I don't want to disappoint you, Chief Justice Robinson.
Okay.
I'm here for you. Mr. Attorney Goldschmidt, thank you for all your work on this. And Marcia Vandercook, I think we are all thrilled that you came back to take on this project. And that's not to negate any of the other work that all the rest of you did. So thanks to all of you for working on this. If I were handed this project, I would have run as fast as I could away from it. So I appreciate that all of you took the time to do this. I want to ask you a question. I'm not actually sure who the best person is to ask this question. So maybe as more of you speak, you could weigh in on this. But I'm looking at former Assistant Attorney General Christopher Wren's letter to the court. And he brought up some issues, and he obviously has a much better handle on some of this, some of the words that we might use. I want to note that on page 9 of 12 of his letter, he does refer to wingdings and dingbats. He's not referring to any member of the court. He's talking about the use of symbols. But he brings up some issues about bookmarks and how they're going to be used and defined. He brings up the issue of hyperlinks and how they would be used here. He also talks about word counts and uses a couple of interesting examples on how word counts might be, words could be counted differently. He's got an interesting example where he uses the example of the Wisconsin statutes and how a space can make a difference between whether it's a three words or four words. And I'm just wondering, like I said, I don't know who the best person is to speak to the issues that he brought up. He says he's in support of the rule, but he just, I think, brought these things to our attention. So I guess what I am doing, because he's not here, is bringing them to your attention and just wondering what your feeling is about the four or five issues that he brought up. Thank you.
Marcia, perhaps you can weigh in first on that, and then Attorney Goldschmidt.
I can speak to that. We did look at his comments, and we changed a couple of our definitions in response. We thought he made some good points about internal versus external and about the way that words were counted in terms of using characters as opposed to letters or numbers, that the definition that was in the statutes needed to be adjusted for that. I didn't really see that there was any solution to what he was talking about in terms of whether you have spaces in between the section symbol, for instance, and, you know, and then the subsections, you know, you could add a number of words. But it seemed to us that the most practical definition that anybody would be able to use in real life was the way that a word processor counts words. So we tried to come up with a definition that mirrored that. Because I don't think we have anybody who's sitting there counting words. I think everybody's using the word processor to do that. So that was how we did that. We looked at all of those, and the only thing that we thought about his definitions is that they were pretty detailed and very keyed to the way the technology works today. But that's not so much how the appellate rules are written. The definitions tend to be fairly broad and simple, and we wanted to continue to do that because technology does change. And we may see that very well in the way that we use hyperlinks, for instance. So we wanted to keep the definitions open enough that it would work in the context we were in.
Attorney Goldsmith, do you have something you'd like to add to Judge Karofsky's question?
Well, I would say I was impressed with those comments. They were exceptionally thorough. And I'm a bit of a typography buff myself, so I appreciated that aspect. The only thing that I would add to what Marcia said is, first of all, on matters relating to internal hyperlinks and bookmarks, I think Jean Bosquet could speak to that when she comes before you. And secondly, you know, consistent with the philosophy that Marcia laid out at the beginning, we tried to focus on aspects unique to e-filing. And if something like word counts have been working under the current rule, including at the circuit court level, that wasn't something we were necessarily looking to change through this process.
Thank you. Our clerk of court, Sheila Reif, can you proceed next?
Good morning. May it please the court. E-filing has been a collaborative effort. My office has been working hard on development of the appellate e-filing system since this court approved the pilot project. I appreciate all the assistance and support that we've received. The appellate e-filing committee has done thoughtful work overseeing the pilot project and reviewing the draft rule. I'm confident that the proposed rule will work well in the appellate courts and for the public. CCAP has listened carefully to the needs of my office and has built a system that will serve us well for years to come. I want to express my sincere appreciation to my staff for working in the office through the pandemic. Excuse me. At the same time, they've been learning and implementing the e-filing system. They continue to work in the office and helped others who were actually working remotely also. While this has been a challenge, one of the unexpected positives of the pandemic has been that attorneys and court personnel are now more comfortable using electronic documents. I also appreciate the cooperation of the Court of Appeals judges and staff in testing out the system. I'm proud of the system that we've built so far and look forward to working with the Supreme Court as well. The pilot project in the Court of Appeals has gone very smoothly. We started out with a few hand-picked cases. 8 months ago, we opened it up for voluntary e-filing by any party who wanted to participate. As of yesterday, we now have 1,077 cases in the Court of Appeals using voluntary e-filing. Many of these cases were started on paper and were converted to e-filing at the request of the parties. The pilot is running very smoothly, and it served its purpose of revealing problem areas where CCAP quickly found solutions for everybody, for all involved. I've received many positive comments from attorneys. They like the circuit court e-filing and looking forward to using it in the appellate courts. I'd like to briefly mention the cost efficiencies that e-filing offers. One clear advantage is e-filing saves the courts money on shipping, postage, storage space for case files and court records. E-filing allows my office to process documents more efficiently as they're received and enter them immediately into the file where they're accessible to all users. Briefs are easier to screen online, and they can be corrected and uploaded the same day instead of within a week or two with the paper briefs. It was always a complicated process of either staff trying to change the briefs and getting mail copies in to try and put pages together. It was always a complicated process in the paper world. Once the transition from paper files is complete, it's ultimately much more efficient to manage records electronically. My experience in the circuit court was that e-filing provided a better distribution of staff duties, and I'm seeing the same results here. The implementation plan, in addition to considering the rule petition, this court also will also want to consider an implementation schedule for when e-filing will go into effect. For the changes to the rules, we're asking an effective date of July 1st. For the Court of Appeals, we request that e-filing become mandatory for attorneys on that same date. We believe the Court of Appeals and the bar will be ready to go then. Notices will be sent to all attorneys advising them of the mandatory date, and non-attorneys will receive instructions on how to file if they so choose. The system worked well in the circuit courts to make all parties well prepared. An appellate court staff will be trained on the software and new procedures. All of them will be trained. We will also update all our guides and checklists and post all the needed information on our website. We will be working with the state bar on a presentation for their annual meeting in June, and we plan to use bar publications and listservs to get the word out to our filers. For the Supreme Court, with the help of Mr. Goldschmidt and another committee member, we have identified a small number of cases to be part of this pilot by invitation. We plan to add cases gradually to test and refine the system, and we recommend that the Supreme Court stay in the voluntary phase for a while as we work on scanning, programming, procedures, and training. Once we can assess our progress, I look forward to working with the court and CCAP to develop a workable rollout schedule for the Supreme Court. We want to make sure the system meets your needs, and I think you'll be pleased with the many positive changes that it offers. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have of me. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody on the court have a question of our clerk of court, Sheila Reed?
I do, but I'm not sure if it's if you're the right person, Ms. Reef. But if not, that's fine. Somebody else can answer. Do you have a date in mind for when this would be live for the Supreme Court? It sounds like there's a proposed date certain for the Court of Appeals. But I'm curious about what the vision is for our court.
I think the decision was made, it'd be up to your court to decide what date would work once you're just in the beginning of the process. So to be fair, that's something that you, when you're comfortable, then that would be something that you would let us know when you're comfortable with being mandatory.
Okay. Any other questions? Moving right along, now our guru who has put us in this position, I think, Jean Bisquette, do you want to give us a little more information about what we are going to be hopefully using soon?
Sure. So good morning, Your Honors. As Marcia mentioned earlier, the Wisconsin courts have made some pretty remarkable progress with the e-filing system. The circuit courts have been using mandatory e-filing since 2016, and over the past 5 years, we've learned that e-filing is very popular with filers, court staff, and judges. Since mandatory e-filing began, over 2 million cases and 18 million documents have been e-filed in the circuit courts. Circuit courts have realized significant savings in the reduction of physical file storage, staff processing time for paper documents, and new efficiencies have been gained when multiple people can access a file simultaneously and files no longer get lost or misplaced. Circuit court judges and staff have adapted to using electronic files, and both the e-filing system and the judicial dashboards provide a means for easily creating paper on-demand documents when they are preferred. Over this past year, one of the primary reasons that the circuit courts could continue to function remotely during the pandemic was their ability to work exclusively with electronic files and documents. Judges and court staff did not need to be physically in the courthouse and have access to physical paper files in order to continue their important work. Making e-filing mandatory for the appellate courts is a natural progression to the success of mandatory e-filing in the circuit courts. As we plan for mandatory e-filing for the appellate courts, CCAP remains fully committed to ensuring a smooth transition by assisting electronic filers with support and training, and we're confident that the transition will be fairly straightforward for filers for several reasons. First, the e-filing system used for appellate courts and circuit courts are almost identical, so the learning curve will be fairly flat for many filers. Even for attorneys that only practice in appeals, the feedback received by the clerk's office and the CCAP e-filing call center has been positive, and filers report the system's easy to use. In preparation for mandatory e-filing, CCAP has prepared online learning tools, including video tutorials and quick reference guides. Additional resources will be added and training opportunities will be offered for e-filing groups to help them ease the transition into mandatory e-filing. Finally, our dedicated e-filing call center is ready and available to assist filers through phone calls, chat, and email. CCAP will also continue to work with appellate court staff, judges, and justices to ensure the transition for the court is also smooth. For example, judicial dashboards have been created and implemented for the Court of Appeals and Supreme Court. The dashboards have been programmed in a manner that allows us to easily add features and to fine-tune how cases, documents, and information is displayed. Each month, CCAP will continue to improve these tools by adding new software enhancements based on your feedback, and we'll continue adding new features aimed at creating efficiencies and ensuring the dashboard provides information in the most useful manner possible. The court e-filing system is robust, and the CCAP team's ready to quickly respond to make any necessary changes in programming and provide training and support for the court and filers as we make this transition. One of the defining features in circuit court e-filing is attorneys don't file paper documents and the courts don't maintain paper case files. We are committed to creating a system for the appellate courts where the electronic documents are the preferred version based on advantages they can provide. Electronic documents provide us with an opportunity to incorporate new features into the dashboards and e-filing system to make the documents even more useful than paper versions. For example, documents can be filed with links within documents or links to other documents already filed on a case, such as the appendix or the circuit court record. And we can also explore adding hyperlinks to cases and statutes from safe sources within e-filed documents. All of these features can make the electronic versions much more powerful than the paper version and will create additional efficiencies for filers and for the court. We reached out to other state appellate courts around the country, and many no longer require copies of bound paper briefs. In surveys to other states last summer regarding the need for paper courtesy copies, 68% of respondents did not require any paper briefs. Four states recently stopped requiring them in response to the pandemic. While the transition to paper on demand went smoothly in the circuit courts, we do recognize and understand appellate court reading is different than circuit courts, and different tools may be needed. For judges and justices that may prefer paper, paper on demand means each judge is free to make paper copies, work electronically, or in a blended manner. The dashboards will be enhanced to allow judges and assistants to select documents and print in one easy step. We've recently purchased e-readers that allow judges and justices to work with paper-sized documents. And e-documents will include the ability to edit PDFs with a stylus, mimicking the paper-to-pen experience. So in closing, CCAP's fully committed to ensuring the system works well for filers, the clerk's office, and the courts. We'll continue to make improvements to the tools we provide. We'll enhance the e-filing system based on feedback from filers, and we will provide training and ongoing support to ensure a smooth and successful transition for the courts and the filers. So are there any questions that I could answer?
What did you call that? What you just held up looked like a clipboard? Sort of.
So this is an e-reader. Very thin. And again, it's the size of a piece of paper. So we can load your briefs onto these. You can edit them with a stylus. So you can take your document and you can write notes, you can copy, you can highlight, and then we can bring those right back to your dashboard for you to use your edits and updates back on the dashboard if you prefer.
Will there be, that looks great, by the way, but I'm just wondering, will there be a way for us to edit on Adobe, or do you think this is a better way for us to do it?
I think we should give you both ways to do it. And we're prepared to do that. So first of all, this editing is basically read by Adobe PDF Reader. So any edits you make with this tool, once you upload the document, all of them are highlighted, bold, and annotated, just like you're working in Adobe. We are going to hook in the Adobe Acrobat tools into the dashboard so you can also make changes if you prefer to work on your computer instead of with a reader. One of the reasons we're offering the readers to you as a possible option is because people have eye strain from using computer monitors and the blue light and issues with that. The e-ink readers don't use the blue light. There's very little eye strain. Kindles and Nooks and things like that are e-ink readers. So they're much easier on the eyes. The experience of pen to paper with these devices is very close. So we think that judges and justices will find these useful tools.
Can you make the print big?
You can make the print as big as you want.
Okay, I'm asking on behalf of my colleagues. What'd you say, Justice Hagedorn?
Yeah, can we still get paper cuts, you know, just to...
Staples? So if I, not to get too down in the weeds, but you've piqued my interest, if I've got the e-reader and I'm making changes to a document, you're telling me then if I brought up that document right away on a PDF, I would be able to see right away, or do I need to, am I going to have like 13 different save as versions?
So here's what we're designing right now is you have your documents in the dashboard. We will give you the opportunity to select whatever documents you want and to export them over to your reader. So they will turn up in your library on your reader. You can make changes to them here, and then you can reload them up to the dashboard with all those changes on them.
Okay, thank you.
What about reloading them back into Word, which is where a lot of us do our writing of opinions?
Right, so we can give you the ability to change the PDFs and convert them into Word documents. So that will be another feature we will give you right through the dashboard. In the circuit courts, when the judges are working with documents, we give them the opportunity to edit in Word. We'll do the same thing for you.
Okay, good. So if I understand correctly, the e-readers operate in Adobe. Okay, and when you put them on the dashboard, they're still in Adobe. So it's between the dashboard and I keep my libraries in Microsoft Word. So that's why I'm interested in knowing. So we have to go from the e-reader to the dashboard to our Word libraries, or can we go directly from the e-reader to our Word library?
We can make it work either way. So again, part of what I think Sheila was talking about too, is we just need to work with you very closely and with your assistance, and you tell us how you work and what works best for you. We'll offer you ways we think it could be maybe even more efficient than what you're doing now. But if it works better for you to go directly into your H directory with your Word documents, we can make that work. So, we plan to be very collaborative. We're not going anywhere. This is a big project for us. We want it to be a huge success for the court and for the filers. And we'll keep coming around until you tell us we got it, go away.
On that note, sorry, Chief Justice, were you finished?
No, I was enjoying her comment and appreciating it, yes.
I have a question about when the dashboard is going to be fully ready to use. It's in the pilot form right now. It's got a few of our cases in it, but at this point, it's not really usable and or user-friendly from at least my perspective. I haven't spoken with my colleagues about it. I'm not sure who was involved in the designing of it, but for example, there's when I pull up my dashboard, there's 9 cases in it. We've got a lot more than that. And the 2 tabs for me are cases scheduled and cases pending, which really isn't an indication of what our cases are or where they're at in the process. So I guess it's a multi-question question about what is the timing for getting this fully populated with our cases, and to what extent can we make changes to how cases are classified, what the headings are, that sort of thing. It sounds like there's some customization that's available to the Supreme Court, but perhaps this is how it looks for the Court of Appeals, and will that change things for how they operate?
So the Supreme Court dashboard is different than the Court of Appeals. So the Court of Appeals is where we started with our dashboards, and we refined it for it to work for them based on their feedback. It's very new for you right now with the Supreme Court. And as you said, you can only see 9 cases. that's a problem, you should be able to see all of your cases. So it seems like there may be some setting issues that we need to work on just in regard to your specific dashboard. All of your cases that are electronically available should be showing up if they're pending or active cases. But again, the way we organize those cases and how we classify them, if it doesn't work, we can make those changes. The nice thing about CCAP being part of your office is that if you don't like the way it works, we're here to change it. And so if we need to give you a different view or we need to give you different ways to see and manipulate the cases, we'll make those changes.
But that's one of my concerns with the technology, because, I mean, obviously, again, we have dozens of cases. So if only 9 are showing up, who is involved with the programming? And I mean, I'm concerned about what may not show up in the future.
I can tell you, I'm extremely confident that all of your cases will be on the dashboard. The circuit court judges rely only on the dashboard to see their cases. They don't have paper files. We know we're not missing and losing cases. It's a new system. And like I said, that sounds like a configuration issue or some kind of a view setting that hasn't been worked out. But all of your cases will be on there with, I say that with extreme confidence. When we're ready to go, you will have every one of your cases available.
And I use the dashboard as a circuit court judge and I loved it. So I'm hoping, although I read a lot more, somebody alluded to earlier, it's kind of, you know, hundreds to thousands of pages. I'm interested in that reader. But anyway, thank you. That answered my questions for now.
Are there other questions for Jean?
I have a comment for Jean. When I was preparing for this hearing this morning, the words of an opinion from 1875 came to mind. And that is the case of In Re, the admission of Lavinia Goodell, a woman who wanted to be admitted as a lawyer to the bar of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And then Chief Justice Rosenberry said this, and I quote, "If these things are to come, I will take no voluntary part in bringing them about." And so that was the attitude with which I approached the preparation for this hearing, sort of. But let me say more seriously, I am delighted and comforted by your encouraging words and very appreciative for your work and the work of everyone on this committee. And glad that you're at the helm of CCAP. So thank you to you and all of the members of the committee.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Jean? Okay, Judge Stark, will you proceed?
Yes, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you this morning about the Court of Appeals perspective with the voluntary e-filing project. And it seems appropriate that I speak last since we are essentially some of the end users here. And I also need to give you a caveat that I am not at all technologically savvy. So I'm going to speak in glowing terms about this project, but it's not because I'm a tech geek, but because I've really appreciated what's been done here. And I want to extend a special thanks to everyone who's worked on this project, and particularly the people who are speaking to you this morning. If I were to use two words to sum up our experience on the Court of Appeals from an end user's perspective, I would have to say the words were seamless and successful. The Court of Appeals started our voluntary e-filing project in the summer of 2020, and our district, District 3, was the first district in which cases were rolled out. And as mentioned, there were several, one civil and one criminal case selected to try this as a pilot, and then from then we progressed. Some of the numbers have been given to you, over 1,077 cases filed in the Court of Appeals from August 1st, 2020 to February 19, 2021 have been e-filed out of the 3,502 cases that were filed. So just under 31% have participated in our voluntary e-filing project. And I think that lends significant support to some of the information Mr. Goldschmidt provided to you. The bar is ready and they are willing and thankful for this process. Overall, Our Court of Appeals experience, judges and staff, has been excellent. And I did a very informal poll from some of my colleagues to get that feedback for you. It is well used, it's accepted, and there have been no concerns or significant complaints. If we've had any issues, CCAP has been wonderfully receptive to talking with us and working through any bugs. This has been a logical progression from e-filing in the circuit court, and I think you've heard that from several people, but it bears repeating. It makes perfect sense to me, particularly having been a former circuit court judge. It has been a lifesaver, frankly, for our remote work, particularly during COVID times. But I think many of us work remotely. I live 90 miles from my court. And so this has been terrific. I have to say it has not affected the ability of my colleagues to do their work. You can make of it what you wish, and you can adapt it to your own personal style. Perhaps a third, maybe less of us work completely electronically. I don't use any paper. A third of us are mixed. Some work electronically, some print what they feel they need to if it's a complicated situation, for instance. And a third use only paper. They print everything. And all of them have found that this works fine for their personal styles. On a personal level, my experience has been excellent. I'm the presiding judge in District 3, and this saves, excuse me, enormous time and money, physical file storage. We, of course, had to have everything filed in Madison, then everything had to be UPS'd or FedExed to us in Wausau. If there were issues, we had to ship some documents back, maybe for motions to Madison, if they couldn't be scanned sufficiently. In the last 8 years on the bench, we have lost, the mailing services have lost 2 complete circuit court records. And you can imagine the time, the delay, and the expense associated with having to try to recreate that. We've had no issues with any missing files or any missing records with respect to the e-filing project. And of course, the time and the expense savings is remarkable. I have found it wonderfully easy to use the electronic record, internal location of cited documents, word search. If you have 2 screens, it makes it even easier, but I work often just on my laptop with no problem. And responding to some of the questions about the dashboard, I loved the dashboard as well when I was on the circuit court bench, and it's much expanded since I was there. So I supported it being created in the Court of Appeals. And I think eventually you will grow to really enjoy it on the Supreme Court as well. People at CCAP worked with us to create what we wanted and what we thought would be necessary for our court. They met with us many times, individually as well as a group or with representatives. Ours looks different from what I understand than yours does, but all our cases are on it. I can access anyone's case on the Court of Appeals. I can access, of course, just mine are cited. I have motions there that I'm easily able to access. We have quick links that we have designed that we find useful. And I absolutely love it for drafting, cutting, pasting, and then going out and looking for things with quick toggling between things rather than having to go out and search for different things using different formats. So in addition, you can set it up as you wish to have different users using your dashboard with you. I have extended the use of my dashboard to a clerk, and she works with me on that. So it's you make of it what you wish as well, but CCAP has been terrific with working to make it useful for us, and I'm sure they'll do the same for you. We've had minimal issues with e-filing and the dashboard, and those I think will be corrected, and Jean assures me they will be over time, and one of them is the Adobe PDF issue that you've been addressing. I have found that frustrating. Jean can attest that I've asked her every time I've talked to her about when that's going to be corrected, and they're working on it, and I've been assured that's a situation. But in the meantime, it's by no means a significant impediment. It just requires a few additional steps to download things to Word and then change things around. I wanted to note that we have not required external hyperlinks and bookmarks for security reasons, but also because we didn't want to, we were very conscious in our process about not creating barriers and impediments to people who might not have the significant ability of people, say, in firms like Mr. Goldschmidt's. So particularly pro se litigants or prisoners were people we had in mind in not requiring some of those things. We don't want to create barriers to people using this technology. So that was part of our consideration in our work on this committee. And I do have to say, the committee process, the rule development process was wonderful. I think all the necessary parties were there to provide input. I think everyone's suggestions and concerns were very well respected. And there was a continued emphasis on making this user-friendly from all perspectives, not just the end user's perspective. So our takeaway, if you will, is that the Court of Appeals is ready for mandatory e-filing. We ask the court to please adopt the new rules effective July 1st of 2021 to set a rollout schedule for the Court of Appeals mandatory on the same date. We think that it's somewhat inefficient to try to work in two worlds at once with some paper and some electronic, and it's better at this point not to do that any longer than necessary. And then finally, we hope that the Supreme Court pilot goes well and you can join us soon thereafter. Do you have any questions?
Thank you.
I have one question.
Yeah.
So if we adopt the rule petition and the effective date is July 1st, but the Supreme Court is not ready then, what happens? Because if it's mandatory and there's no requirement for paper briefs, are we going to need to have some sort of supplemental rule from the Supreme Court that, no, you still have to file with paper with the Supreme Court?
To my knowledge, the rollout will be only mandatory with respect to the Court of Appeals, and the Supreme Court would continue to function as it does until such time as you chose to adopt a mandatory date. But I should probably defer to Marsha or Sheila or Jean to confirm that.
Mm-hmm. I can speak to that. There's a section in the rule that addresses that exactly. Because you remember when we did the circuit court rollout, we did it county by county, and we also did it case type by case type. We started with civil and then we moved on to others. Your rollout doesn't need to be anywhere near that elaborate, but through this provision in the rule, what it says is that you have the ability to set a rollout schedule and that it becomes mandatory when that schedule dictates. And what we did with that then was got the word out to the bar through all of their newsletters. Most people are already on CCAP email as circuit court e-filing users. We worked through the clerks of court. We had lots of different ways to reach people. And we made sure that everybody knew when the next phase was coming. So there was plenty of time for people to prepare. And I don't think we caught very many people off guard. We have lots of ways to reach them and let them know. So what you would do is work through the process, get comfortable, get all the tools you need, have the dashboard where you want it. And Ms. Reeve will be working on scanning, but I understand that's going pretty well. And then when you get the word, your first big group of cases, the programming is pretty much well in place. And then the other things that would come along later would be things like disciplinary hearings, bar admissions, rule petitions, things like that. So it's you would determine the schedule, but it's very easy to let people know. And it was very successful for circuit court.
Judge Stark, I have a question. For the Luddites who still like to print paper, what does that process actually look like? I remember right as I was leaving the Court of Appeals, that was under considerable discussion. And I'm curious practically what that looks like from an administrative side for your colleagues.
Well, because I don't print, I'm not very, probably the person to ask, but you can go into your dashboard, you select your case, you select your brief, and you just push print, essentially, is how it works. Okay. And it's not hard at all. And as I mentioned, eventually, if not right now, all of your cases are there. And when you call up the case, you can look at the record, you click on a link for that, You have the briefs and all the correspondence related to the case, any motions in a left column on your dashboard, and you just click on the PDF, it comes up and you just print it.
Good old fashioned print button.
That's right.
I didn't know if there was, I remember there was some discussion about, the administrative staff time for printing all the briefs that were coming in and those sorts of things at the time. But
I can respond to that a little bit. I think had this rolled out in a non-COVID time, probably more staff would have been called upon to print those documents, because if you're in the same office and it's easy to pick them up, you would just say, well, would you, we're conferencing these cases this week, would you please print all the briefs for all of those? And that's how it would have been done. But because we were all remote, that doesn't work well when, for instance, Judge Ruiz is in Appleton and his staff is in Wausau. It doesn't work very well. So he has accommodated to print whatever he needs, and he says it works just fine. So I don't know if staff will be doing it or not. Again, different judges do it different ways. I believe in District 4, they do ask some of their staff to print the things that they need. But again, it's how you prefer to use it, which I have thought is really wonderful, actually.
Thanks.
Other questions?
May I just go back and ask Jean Bosquet a question based on what
you
Justice-
ask anybody a question.
So I just want to follow up on what Justice Rebecca Bradley was talking about the CCA dashboard. I noticed the same thing, that I only have 7 cases scheduled. Actually thrilled me, but now I learned that we have many more. When we notice something like that, who should we get in touch with? Because I noticed it over the weekend when I was trying to get some information on a case. I just thought that was how it was set up, and the maximum was 7, and then I had to go to the case search to find the case I was looking for. But do you want an email from us, or is there someone we should be contacting as we're starting to use the dashboard more and more?
Sure. You can actually email me or Andrea Olson and let us know that, and we'll get those in the queue. You're going to have a project manager that's dedicated to your dashboard and changes that we need to do for you for e-filing in software development. So we'll give you that person very shortly that you'll have as a contact also, but it helps for us to know where the pain points or issues are with your system, so we can decide where we use resources. So again, we may decide not to do a different project if there's some high priority things that we need to do with the dashboard.
So when I'm looking at the dashboard, and if we're getting too far off topic and into the weeds on this dashboard, we can stop and I can contact you directly. But I'm just curious, where it says cases scheduled, is the idea for that to be the upcoming cases that we're going to hear, or the?
Yes.
So those are in the future.
Yes.
The pending cases are the ones where we've already had oral argument, but an opinion has not yet gone out.
Correct.
Okay.
Elected, Justice Karofsky, as you probably noticed, they're a hodgepodge, which is why I was asking why those headings were being used, because again, our cases are not populated in there properly or nowhere near completely.
Right.
And so
you're saying that like when you look at the cases.
Yes, for example, there's a case in there that's under cases scheduled, but we've already heard the case.
Yeah.
So I guess it should be in cases pending, but again, those are terms that we do not use at the Supreme Court.
Right.
Right, and so I think again, one of the things that Judge Stark said is that once we put out the dashboard for the Court of Appeals, I will note that they weren't happy about it. When we did do the demo at judicial conference for them, Judge Stark told us that they would be really excited and we should come and get all of them in one room. And yep, that was Judge Stark. It was like, could we leave right now? It didn't go over well. They didn't think it was going to work, and they had a lot of issues and complaints. So your issues seem tiny compared to what happened at judicial conference. But what it allowed us to do is we heard all of the things that didn't look right or wasn't the way we work. And honestly speaking, we're really good with circuit courts. There's a lot of circuit court judges and a lot of volume there. We know how circuits work. we've gotten better with Court of Appeals and how the Court of Appeals judges and workflows go, and we need to get to that same level with the Supreme Court. So as I said before, we're committed to fixing it, to making sure it's organized in a way that works for you and for your staff, and that you can have confidence that everything you need to know about that's kind of coming up or where you have work to do, that you can quickly get to that and have assurances everything's there that should be there.
Well, I really appreciate it. Having come from a large circuit court caseload of over 1,700 pending cases, that system works remarkably well. So looking forward to having it work that well up here. Thanks for all your hard work. Really appreciate it.
Marcia, you talked a little bit about the rollout for the Supreme Court being set by the Supreme Court. And we've talked about dashboards, which is a convenience, I think, for the court to use, but not, in my view, necessary to whether or not there is mandatory e-filing for any level of appellate review, Supreme Court, as well as the Court of Appeals on July 1st in regard to the filers. Okay, so unless I'm misunderstanding what you're saying, we have voluntary e-filing now at the Supreme Court. Sheila has set up some pilot projects along with Attorney Goldschmidt and some others, fine. But I'm not understanding why it shouldn't be mandatory e-filing for all appellate courts July 1st, and the justices, as did the judges at the Court of Appeals, will work with STCAP staff so they're comfortable, but they can still print what they want. So I don't see why there should be a different rollout time for the Supreme Court. So maybe you could explain that to me.
I think maybe I'm going to defer that question to Jean. She can probably explain it better than I can. I think you want to be in a position where you can work comfortably with what you have. If you make it mandatory, you'll only be receiving electronic documents. And I think you want to be ready to, in a position where everything is in place for you to be comfortable working. But I'll let Jean explain it a little better.
Okay, Jean?
Yeah, so there's actually two ways you can look at this. And just what Marcia said is correct. You need to be comfortable with your tools, or your other option is your support staff will be printing everything out and mimicking your paper world that you're in today. So you've got to make the commitment that you're ready to, you know, get on the dashboard, use these readers and test this out between now and July 1st. And if that goes swimmingly, July 1st is a great date for you to also consider for mandatory e-filing. But that means that we need to get enough cases through to make sure we find any glitches in the system, or again, those pinch points you need us to address. As I said, we will do monthly releases. We'll get feedback from you. We'll make sure that we get that dashboard honed as quickly as possible and that you and your staff are well trained. But once we turn on mandatory e-filing, the paper's gone, and then that burden's going to go to your staff to kind of recreate that process if you're still leaning on it. But the flip side of that is everything's harder when you're in both worlds at once.
Right.
So if you know, it's a little bit of ripping the Band-Aid off. If you have paper and you have electronic and everything's not in one place for you, you're relying on two systems to manage everything. And that can get hard the longer you do that. So if you wouldn't do a July 1st date, which you don't have to, you would want to do something close by. You don't want to go a year or two where you aren't in mandatory e-filing, because it's just very hard for the filers to manage and it's hard for the court to manage.
It's hard for the clerk of courts to manage too, because things will come in for the Court of Appeals that are electronic and required to be so by July 1st, and things could come into us after July 1st that are still paper. So, you know, I mean, we have a lot of work to do if people are not comfortable with electronic, and I really do appreciate that. So, I understand why the difference, but the difference isn't necessary. In other words, if the court decides we're good to go July 1st, because we've worked with CCAP between now and July 1st, then everything can go July 1st. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can be ready. I think the clerk's office would be supportive of that. And it's just, it's the end of the day is how comfortable is the Supreme Court with making that commitment between now and July 1st to be ready to be working in a different way than you are right now.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Chief, I thought you were done.
No, I wanted to continue a little bit. We have one of our court commissioners here, Julie Rich. And I know the court commissioners work very closely with the clerk's office in trying to be sure that things are moved to the Supreme Court as quickly as they can be moved to the Supreme Court. And I just wonder if you or your colleagues have thought about what might need to be done in regard to your assistance of the court to help with moving e-filing at the Supreme Court forward.
Yes, we've already had discussions with some of the staff at CCAP who I will echo what Judge Stark said. They've been terrific. They clearly listen. And when we initially saw it, we thought this is not how it works for us at all. And obviously our workflow is a little bit different than your workflow because we're focusing primarily on petitions and trying to get those to you. We also are concerned about getting high profile, time sensitive materials to you. And it was pretty extraordinary to watch the CCAP staff listen to us, and you could see the wheels turning, and they were coming back very quickly with feedback on how they could make it work better for us. And so I guess I'm inclined to feel that the way the rule is structured, it's really nicely laid out. It's actually an 809-802-2. It says the schedule will be at the direction of the court, communicated by the director's office. And so what I like about that is it gives the court a little flexibility. If you go ahead and pass the rule, the court can really decide when it's ready to move forward. I think my office is excited to move forward. It does work closely with the clerk's office and, you know, would make this a top priority if that's what the court wanted.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Jill, did you have something you wanted to ask?
Just real quickly, and Jean, maybe you covered this, but it seems that part of us getting real comfortable with it is figuring out the new technology. And when do you think an e-reader would be available for us to try out to go be able to toggle back and forth with our computers and our laptops?
So we can do that relatively quickly. We have two of the bigger ones in, and then there's some that are just a little bit smaller. So total, we have four that we could make available. One of the pieces we don't have hooked in yet is how it can easily move your files between the dashboard and the e-reader. So right now you'd have to do that with a USB drive. So we wanted to put a feature in place so it's just much more seamless for you to move files back and forth before we made them available. But I'd say in the next couple weeks, we can bring those over to the court and hand them out. We have others that are on order.
Great.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, well, that is the end of the speakers that I have on my list. Jenny Andrews, you didn't sign up to speak, but I have heard that you are retiring. And I wanted to thank you for your efforts. I understand that your skills and knowledge greatly facilitated the Court of Appeals being able to come together and do this. And I remember when this first started, because I've been on the committee in and out and in and out, you were not a fan of e-filing. But boy, when you decided it was good for the court, you really put your shoulder to the oar and did a great job. So as you're leaving us, I want you to know, on behalf of the whole court, we very, very much appreciate your efforts. We appreciate your knowledge, and we appreciate your support of the court. Now, like Marsha Vandercook, whom I can never leave alone, she keeps thinking she's retiring. You know, we love volunteers. So if you are interested, I would bet that there will be things that you can continue to assist the court with. But on behalf of the whole court, thank you so much for your efforts. This project was greatly facilitated by your work.
Thank you, Chief Justice, for those very kind words.
Any other questions of anyone? Okay, well, the court thanks the whole committee. You all did a great job.
Jean, you are the guru of electronics for the court. We are so lucky to have all of this in-house. I know I talk with my colleagues in other states. They have nothing like this, absolutely nothing like this. So the fact that we can do this internally and make it comfortable for us who actually use it rather than buying it from some vendor somewhere who would just like our check, but not so much our questions and our moans and our groans. Please thank your staff. I mean, we appreciate them every single day. So, and Attorney Goldschmidt, you've been involved, oh my goodness, in so many ways in this. Your participation and the time that your law firm permits you to dedicate to the court is really very, very much appreciated. So not to leave anybody out, but the committee has just done an outstanding job. We are going to adjourn this hearing now, but I need to have the court meet in closed conference immediately following our adjournment. So we will just dial up with our usual number. And this matter is adjourned. Thank you.